it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to a season-ending edition of Hittin' Season. I'm your host, John Stolness, from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. This is episode number 323. We're recording this just after the Phillies' final game of the season. Folks, we made it through another 162 games.
We did it.
Joining me, as she does every Sunday night, is the great Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. You can follow her on Twitter, at Liz Rocher. So, Liz, here we are at the end. 162 is in the books. The Phillies, for the eighth straight year, do not finish with a winning record. They finished the season 81-81, same as in 2012, the first season that kicked off this eight-year run of mediocrity. How are you feeling now that the 2019 season is fully in the books?
Relieved. It somehow lasted even longer than last season.
It did. This year did feel longer than last year.
It did, and not in a good way. Yeah. You know, it never felt like they could get on top of anything. It never felt that anything was right. Everything felt like it was going wrong, and that just every decision everyone was making at every single moment.
Yeah,
it was never the best outcome that it could be.
No, I totally agree with that, and. Just by the way, Justin Clue is not going to be with us tonight. Justin is away enjoying
camping out of cell phone range.
Yeah, so Justin will be with us next week. But
as he tweeted earlier today, when I tweeted that I was turning on this game because I felt like I had to, he tweeted, I went camping
out of
cell phone range specifically to avoid this emotion.
So there you go.
And Justin, I'm with you.
Yeah.
You were correct.
Yeah.
And I was wrong to turn it on.
Yeah. I didn't watch any of the game today either. I had family commitments. I actually went camping yesterday with my family and got home midday today and just was a zombie for most of the day today. So.
And I don't go camping.
No, I understand. I understand. I have kids. I don't know if I would go camping without the kids, but they love it. And so that's what we roll. And I enjoy it now. I mean, it's we don't go anywhere far or anything like that, and it's one night. So, but anyway, it's camping's good time, and Justin is out doing that tonight, and we'll be doing this. We'll be talking about this Philly season, and you know, I think one of the things that made this season so frustrating, and we've talked about this before a little bit, is that they never got on a roll when it seemed like they were going to get on a roll multiple times. You know, they would sweep the Cubs in that dramatic series at home, and then you'd think, okay, man, their schedule really sets them up now to go on a run here and kind of salt this thing away, and then they wouldn't. Then it would be a disappointing couple series against losing teams, and then they'd ramp back up again. They'd win 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 6 against some really good competition, get to within sniffing distance, and you think, okay, you know, maybe this is what does it, because now they have the Padres and the Pirates and the Marlins coming up. This should be where we eat. And, you know, it didn't. That's the kind of way the season went over and over and over again. Even with the roster kind of as riddled with injury as it was in certain parts of it, they were better than the bad teams that they lost to. And I think that's why people have a real bad taste in their mouth. We all recognize the fact that this team suffered a ton of injuries in the bullpen. They lost Andrew McCutchen. They lost Jake Arrieta. But at the same time, they were better than a lot of the teams that they ended up losing to, and they really could have taken advantage. And that's where I think, you know, a lot of the fault to the coaching went, a lot of the fault to the manager went, is people got frustrated by that because they felt like they were being set up and let down over and over again. To me, that's why this season felt longer.
Yeah. I mean, it just felt relentless. Like, there was just no joy this season. And Bryce Harper tried so hard.
He did.
He tried so hard. And I was so encouraged today watching the game in parts, not by anything I was seeing on the field at all. But instead, I was encouraged. Martin Prado, who has played baseball for a million years, has managed to stay employed forever because he's a solid guy. He isn't retiring officially, but he's done with the Marlins, who he's been with for a while. And, you know, he's getting very emotional on the field and, you know, everyone is, you know, coming out and paying their respects. And, like, the crowd stood up and applauded. I'm like, well, that's very nice.
Yeah.
And the next, you know, at the start of the next inning, Bryce Harper comes up to bat and strikes out or flies out, and the crowd gives him a standing ovation, non-sarcastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It made me feel good. Like, we fans, it was a tough season. It did not work out the way we wanted. It was the first season that really mattered, that we all knew mattered, that we knew was going to be difficult. It was the first one, and we all made it to the end. We're still here.
Yeah.
There was still a decent crowd at the ballpark today. You know, they were all in good spirits, despite the fact that the Phillies lost.
Yeah, And today was, Fan Appreciation Day. And JT Realmuto after the game was giving away bats to little kids in the stands. You know, he was pulling out some brand new bats and just giving them away, to pointing out little kids. And so that was pretty cool. And Bryce Harper made a nice emotional statement before the game to the crowd that was there, acknowledging the fact that it didn't go the way they wanted to, but thanking the fans for coming out. And Philly's attendance was way up this year. I mean, they were they had a tremendous increase in attendance, a lot of it because of the offseason that they had and the expectations being raised. And ultimately, you know, it was a letdown of a season, but Phillies fans did come out. And this summer, there was a lot of interest in this baseball team where it hasn't been there before. The Phillies were constantly the talk on sports radio this summer, which is not something that's a given in this city. You know, Philadelphia tends to forget about the Phillies quite often, and they certainly did during the rebuild. So I think the Phillies at least got back on the map for much of the summer, but you know, now is the time for things to move forward. And the question that everybody is going to be asking now for the next couple of days, until John Middleton and or Andy McPhail come forward and they have their news conference, or until the news breaks and we get an alert on our phones, it's going to be the future of Gabe Kapler. It's going to be the future of the manager of this baseball team, who has been really, now outside of Bryce Harper, the second most recognizable name and face of the Philadelphia Phillies. And There are critics of his by far, and there are a lot of supporters of his who point to the injuries, who point to the fact that, you know, they finished two games above their Pythagorean win expectancy based on run differential. You've got people who look at all the injuries and note that he had this team afloat through most of the season and contending for a wild card with 7/8 of their bullpen decimated and the loss of their leadoff hitter. But I think most, and I did a poll, an informal poll on Twitter a little while ago with about 2,000 people responded, and it's about a 70-30 split, Liz, based on what I was able to see, you know, when looking at whether or not Gabe Kapler should be the manager in 2020, with 70% on the no side and 30% on the yes side. And I don't know how John Middleton is going to make this decision. I don't know what criteria he's going to use, but, you know, we've been talking about it over these last few weeks, and I know you were one who was saying that you didn't think it would happen. Where do you stand today?
It feels like it's going to happen. It feels like the intensity is ramped up, and there's almost, especially since they lost today.
Yeah.
Man, not that John Middleton would do anything rash, but if anything could have put a positive spin on the season, it would be we finished with a winning record for the first time since 2011. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't even do that. They came within a game and couldn't get it done. You know, it's all so, it feels like it's a little unfair to Kapler, because, you know, you're right. How much could he control? And he did so much. But you can't look at decisions for a manager on that, you know, big picture level, because that brushes out what the manager's actual job is. Mm-hmm. And everything he had to work with, every choice he made. Like, if you back up, you can say, yeah, he did all of this stuff, you know, he kept them in it, you know, when everyone was injured. But you have to look at what he was working with and the decisions he made in game, you know, the way the players are acting and reacting. Like, if you pull back too far, you cannot see what matters with Gabe Kapler. And I think that's going to be what ends up, you know, shown in the door. And I mean, I think regardless, they're going to shoot Chris Young somewhere off into the stratosphere. He's,
Well, we're going to talk about the Athletic article that Matt Gelb and Megan Montemuro wrote this week, because it really shed a light on some of the pitching problems. We're going to get into that here in just a second. But let me give you first some reaction after the game. A couple of the players, really the top two players on the Phillies, talked about Gabe Kapler. Before the game, there is a picture of John Middleton was in the dugout shaking Kapler's hand after the series finale today. It was so after the game, Middleton was down there, and it looked like a friendly handshake. like, and obviously you're not going to read anything from that, but Kapler was asked by reporters a few minutes after the game to talk about his future, and he said, "It's definitely not a conversation I need to have right now in this room. It's a private conversation. My job is to focus on managing the Phillies even after game 162, which is the right thing to say for sure. Bryce Harper was asked about Gabe
I'm going to be managing everyone all the way home tonight.
That's right.
Making sure they get there safely.
It never ends, this job. Bryce Harper said, quote, "It hasn't been his fault," talking about Kapler. "He's had some tough decisions to make, bullpen-wise, lineup-wise, not having your leadoff guy, not having your setup guys. A lot of guys have been thrown into the fire this year from AA and AAA. So, I mean, it's just how the season goes. It's part of it. We're going to build on that next year, hopefully. I love our staff. I enjoy our staff. I enjoy playing for our staff. They've made me better each day, and I appreciate that." And then JT Realmuto said, "As of now, I expect to see him back here. We feel like he's done a great job for us. He gets the guys to play hard. We all love playing for him. He's been our manager all year, and nobody's had anything to say about it. We've obviously had a rough last couple of weeks and fell out of contention. For me, Gabe's our manager. He's a guy that this clubhouse really respects." So if John Middleton, if you know, if this is what Harper and Realmuto are saying in public, that seems like pretty strong support for Gabe Kapler. Obviously, John Middleton, I think, over the last week while he was traveling with the team in Washington, they had exit interviews with players. I'm sure that he had an opportunity to talk to Harper and Realmuto about the manager and about the coaching staff. And if this is what he heard from most of the players, it's certainly possible Kapler could be back. But, you know, Jim Salisbury said on Saturday that it smelled to him like a change was in the air. You know?
Oh, Jim, I love that.
I do.
So good.
Jim, that was a very good way to put it. And, you know, there was video of Kapler after the game emotionally shaking hands and hugging all of the players as they came off the field and were heading back into the clubhouse from the dugout. It felt like, and it looked like, a guy who was managing his last game, but we probably won't know until Monday or Tuesday what the Phillies decide to do here. And then when we know, we'll do an emergency podcast. But what did you think of those quotes from Harper and from Realmuto?
I can appreciate it. I'm not in the clubhouse. And I think discounting their opinion is not the right thing to do. But I also think that it's about a lot more than just respect and getting the guys to play hard. It's about, you know, in-game decisions that are being made. You know, making sure that players are receiving, you know, the right information, making sure it's communicated to them correctly.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was that it seems like that was a big problem this season. Mm-hmm. So regardless of how the players feel, I think all of that has to come into it. I just think that he's become too much of a distraction on the whole. I do. I feel like keeping him is going to be a bigger to-do than firing him.
Well, part of the issue, too, here is, and Kapler, really, he can't make a decision based on what the fans want. I meant Middleton. Middleton can't make a decision based on what the fans want with Kapler. Not solely, anyway. But I will say, I mean, it does seem like there's an overwhelming urge for the team to move on. Specifically, I think, just because the fan base is exhausted from this. And like we said, I remember the podcast we did after the first game of the season, his very first game as a manager, when he pulled Nola early and they blew that game. And the game after that, when they had defensive shifting issues and there was the issue with the bullpen, he made the worst first impression any manager could have possibly made on this fan base. And it never went away. Because winning is what makes it go away.
I was just about to say that. You took the words right out of my mouth. We concentrated winning. One long win streak this year would have shut everybody up. Would have shut us up. We would be talking about how great it is. 10 games in a row. That a good team can do that. They could at least win 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Like, there was at no point this year or even the season before did it really feel like, aside from the very beginning last year and this year, you know, at no point did it ever feel like everything was working right. Every single thing was working right. Yeah. It's just such a, it feels like wasted. I mean, it's not, you know, Mets wasted. It's not what, you know, 2019 Mets wasted at all. But it just still feels a little futile after everything we've watched and been through.
Yeah. No, and you know, the thing is, you know, I want Gabe to succeed in this job, because if the Gabe succeeds, then the Phillies succeed, and that's
and that's
what we want. Nobody, I don't think anybody in this fan base didn't want the Phillies to succeed because they dislike Gabe Kapler right from the beginning. I think it seemed pretty clear that he was a different kind of guy and not somebody that has ever been a Phillies manager before. You know, very very unlike any other Phillies manager, and
or really unlike most managers. Period.
Right. Right. Very different way of talking and going about things. And but like you say, it all would have been erased with winning. And that's just not something the team did this year, certainly to the degree with which they were expected to. So we're going to talk a little bit about the piece in The Athletic, because I think that goes a long way in kind of describing some of the issues that went on with the Phillies this year. The again, the piece by Matt Gelb and Megan Montemuro really dove into the pitching philosophy that the Phillies used this year and how it really backfired. And there were so many things in this piece that we could talk about, Liz. But basically the idea was that the Phillies decided to move on from Rick Kranitz, who had a really good relationship with most of the pitchers on the pitching staff. They trusted him. They felt like he was helping them and that he was a good teacher. And instead they booted Rick Kranitz out because they believed that Chris Young, who was based their assistant pitching coach and had never been a pitching coach before, but had worked with the Astros as kind of an advisor and consultant and was really good with numbers, was really good at looking at matchups, was really good at the analytics side of the game. They wanted to make him the pitching coach, and without checking in with any of the pitchers, and Chris Young has not developed that relationship. It certainly, and there was one part where they basically said, he lacked an ability to tell pitchers. He often told them what to do, but not how to do it. And they talked about a broken process, and at least six Phillies sources described a pitching process that was not collaborative.
So many people talked.
Yeah, it was
so many
people
talked. I mean, so many did. I was surprised, and it shows how bad it's gotten, or that some of these guys think that it's time for him to go, whether it's Chris Young or Gabe Kapler. You know, it's time for him to go, or they want to make it known how unhappy they are. But, you know, this is the power that players and insiders have. If you are unhappy and your organization isn't listening to you, this is why the press exists.
Right.
Tell them your secrets.
Yeah. And it really is interesting. They spoke on anonymity because they were worried about management, retaliating or
well, obviously.
Or
I mean,
something.
I think that's,
yeah.
You know, that's understandable.
Yeah. One of the things that really caught my eye was that the Phillies have an algorithm that calculates a number on a 1 to 100 scale to rate every potential batter-pitcher matchup in that day's game. I don't even know how I mean, that just sounds like analytical noise to me, you know? I don't know. I mean, maybe it's effective. Maybe other teams use it and it's effective. But, you know, basically they're using this number that they came up with where they've obviously plugged data into some kind of, you know, formula, and it pours out a number 1 to 100, and that's how they make a lot of their bullpen decisions.
I feel like I'm not a math person, I'm not a stats person, but I feel like aggregation stats like that, where it takes all of these different things and converts them into numbers and gives you something on a scale, it really just flattens out everything. Like, I feel like it just seems dumb to me. Maybe that's why I'm not in baseball and I don't have any math degrees, because it doesn't make sense to me. But I feel like if that's how they're making their decisions, and I don't know if that's how they actually make any decisions, but if that is a primary factor in how they make their decisions, that is frightening. Yeah. Because I feel like you need to see so many more parts of every matchup, every individual player stats to make a decision that doesn't do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I mean,
like I'm talking nonsense.
I'm trying to figure out, like, I mean, is this kind of algorithm one of the reasons why Aaron Nola was allowed to face Freddie Freeman with a base open in that last series in Atlanta when they had Adam Duvall following Freeman they would have had Nola pitching to Adam Duvall, a guy who had spent most of the season in the minor leagues, as opposed to Freddie Freeman, a left-handed slugger who did not have great numbers against Nola, but has great numbers, period. You know, that to me is a use of the analytics in a way that doesn't make sense. I've often said, you know, to the anti-analytics crowd, it's not the numbers, it's not the analytics, it's knowing how to use them. And it was one of the lines from the piece, too, was that what was it here? The Phillies had abundant information, but they were not always certain how best to use it or what to prioritize.
And that's frightening.
Yeah, I mean,
when you're taking all this information and boiling it down into one number on a scale.
Yeah.
That I feel that explains to me some of the more bizarre pitching choices.
For sure.
Of Gabe Kapler, of who to put in at what point and when. You know, none of it ever really made sense to me. And some of it was, it's because it was kind of non-traditional. But I feel like there's a way to blend, you know, modern and traditional in a way that is good and positive and moves the game forward without reducing it to this, where pitchers just feel like they're executing a game plan instead of competing in an athletic event.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. And that's the thing is, and I think part of the reason that Kapler and Young and a lot of the staff had to rely on a number like that is because they didn't have the experience when they were hired. I mean, Gabe Kapler had never really managed before taking this job. You had Chris Young, a guy who had never been pitching coach before taking this job. Now, John Maley was a guy who had a lot of experience, and he's the guy who went. But I think it's interesting, as we're talking about Gabe Kapler's job security here, that Todd Zielecki reported that the team considered dismissing Kapler back in August when they moved on from John Maley and put Charlie Manuel in charge.
Oh, I read that. I didn't read that as they considered getting rid of him. I think I read that in a different way. I thought they had just considered getting rid of Maley, but I could have read that incorrectly.
Yeah, I'll go back and see if I can find the piece. But that was that's how I read it, and you know that's. You know, I don't know that necessarily means he's absolutely going to leave, because the exit interviews that Middleton would have had with the team happened after that, of course. But, there's lots of people who will go on and tell you somebody should be fired, somebody should be gotten rid of. You know, I think the Phillies will do what the Phillies are going to do, and then we'll react and we'll analyze it. But and I think that's why, you know, we're gonna hold off on talking about potential other possibilities at manager. I know Joe Maddon isn't going to be back with Chicago next year. The Pirates fired Clint Hurdle. There's going to be other managers and managerial positions that open up. I'm not going to get into other potential managers until there's a vacancy in Philadelphia. And listen, it certainly felt today like this was kind of the end of Gabe Kapler's tenure in Philadelphia, but it might not be. And I certainly don't want to bury the guy before it actually happens. It would feel pretty awful if we do that and the team decides we're going to run it back with Gabe in 2020 and we have to kind of reset ourselves here. So, But I do think, and I think, Liz, you agree with me, that it felt today like something, like it felt a little different, like the team was the team was ending some kind of an era here. And, you know, I don't know. I know it's not going to be popular with everybody, whatever decision they make.
Yeah, there's no decision they can make that's going to make everyone happy. I feel like the last two seasons have felt like such a flailing mess that it would feel controversial to me for them to actually not fire him.
Yeah.
Because at this point, why not make a fresh start? You have a roster that's only going to keep getting better the more money John Middleton decides to spend on it. You know, he can now be one of the precious few owners in baseball willing to spend money, considering that the Red Sox are about to blow up their roster. For no reason.
Right. And they want to get under the luxury tax is what they've mm-hmm. been talking about, which is...
I mean, that's why the luxury tax sucks.
Yeah.
That's why the luxury tax is stupid, because it acts as a cap. Like, yeah, the Red Sox did go over, but now to get under it, they're just going to blow up their whole team.
Yeah. It acts like an excuse.
Which is absurd.
Yeah.
It's an excuse. It's absurd. And, I mean, you spend years not spending in order mm-hmm. to spend in those few years.
Right.
And make it all worth it by making sure you don't have to continue spending for another 5 years.
Yeah, right.
From the owner's perspective. So it's really, you know, John Middleton can be one of the few people to actually spend money in baseball and try and bring the best players on the open market to Philadelphia. This is the perfect time for him to find someone new.
So let me ask you this.
Everyone likes.
Let me ask you this. So I think we both, I think you and I both agree that Matt Klentak is not getting fired. I think that Matt Klentak is going to stick
around. I'd be
shocked. Yeah, that would honestly be very shocking to me. But do you think, I mean, Gabe Kapler was Matt Klentak's choice. Do you think the next manager is Matt Klentak's choice, or is it John Middleton's choice?
I think it might be more collaborative this time. I don't think Andy McPhail will be involved, if he even knows where the office is. God, can't wait to hear his end of season press conference, guys.
Oh my
it's just going to be stats
barn burner.
About tickets and him drooling about their attendance bump. Can't wait. I'm sure he'll remember the names of everyone on the team.
Yeah, won't need a cheat sheet for that at all. But I think it'll be. I think you're right. It'll be collaborative. It won't be just one guy. It won't be John Middleton. But it for sure will be a group effort. It will not just be the general. I don't think. I mean, who knows? We're not on the inside. But I don't think it will be the general manager's call who the next manager is going to be. But we will wait and see what happens with Gabe Kapler, with Chris Young, with the rest of the Phillies coaching staff. And when it happens, we'll have either a bonus podcast for you if it happens during a day of the week when we don't normally podcast. Otherwise, we will have all the details for you here on Hit and Season or Continued Success, whatever podcast happens to be the first to get up on whatever decision the Phillies make. But when we come back, let's talk about something non-Kapler related. We'll talk a little bit about Rhys Hoskins, and we'll take a look at some of the final statistics for the Phillies this year. Some guys had some surprisingly good seasons, and other guys, oh boy. We'll talk about that next here on Hit and Season. And we're back on Hit and Season. So, Liz, obviously one of the guys that got talked about a lot here in the second half of the season, and not for good reasons, is Rhys Hoskins. You know, Hoskins was supposed to be the running buddy with Bryce Harper. It was supposed to be the 3-4 guys in the lineup. Bryce was supposed to get walks. Rhys was supposed to hit a bunch of homers, and that's how the Phillies were going to score a lot of their runs this year. And after a really hot first half, Rhys Hoskins finishes the season with a .226 batting average, Liz. It's a .364 on base. Really good. That's fine. But a .454 slugging, weighted runs created of .113, wins above replacement 2.1, according to Fangraphs, 29 homers for Rhys Hoskins this year. Rhys Hoskins failed to get to 30 homers. That's a year after he hit 34. This was a season in which more homers were getting hit than ever before, and Rhys Hoskins finishes the season playing 6 additional games with 40 additional plate appearances and 5 fewer home runs. It was a disappointing season. He saw his walk rate go up, his strikeout rate increased only slightly, but everything else went downward. And really, Rhys Hoskins this season was Pat Burrell. Mm-hmm. Rhys Hoskins this season, if you look at the numbers, he was Adam Dunn, only without quite as much power. So
there's no room in baseball for those guys anymore.
Well, he became a 3 true outcome guy this year. He coming into the weekend, he was hitting .184 since the All-Star break, which ranked 146 out of 147 players with enough at-bats to qualify for the batting title. He was 112th in on-base percentage, 134th in slugging. He had an on-base of .401 and a slugging of .530 in the first half of the season. So Scott Lauber wrote about this, and I had Scott on the podcast last week. Scott's a great guy, good podcast guest, and was noting that this winter the Phillies, that some people were saying the Phillies should trade Hoskins. And Lauber wrote, considering that he made $575,000 this year and isn't eligible for salary arbitration until after next season, he could be their most desirable trade chip in the pursuit of a top-of-the-rotation starter to pair with Aaron Nola. But Lauber says don't count on it. Hoskins is a triumph for the Phillies' scouting and player development, areas in which they haven't had many successes over the last decade. They would rather tout him than trade him. And Jack Fritz from High Hopes tweeted out, and this was something we wanted to talk about because I think Jack made a good point here. He said, keeping a player just so you can tout him as an organizational success over the ability to possibly make your team better is insane logic. And I don't think this is something that Lauber is saying the Phillies should do, but that I think he has a good read on the organization and what their priorities might be with regards to Rhys Hoskins. So what did you make of what Lauber had to write, and whether or not that's an insane line of thinking?
I don't know what they're exactly touting, because he had a really difficult year. I mean, yeah, he looks like a reclamation project, but how many Phillies players have we said that about?
Right.
How many Phillies players have we said that about before, you know, while rationalizing, like, you know, that this is why they should or should not trade him? Like, we've said that about a lot of players over the last few years, and I don't know how true it is all the time. I don't know if it's true here. I don't know how, if they can actually get something for him and it's something they need, I don't know why I'd say no. We can't continue to hold on to these guys. You know, like today we saw likely the end of Michael Franco's career in Philadelphia, which made me sad. We had such high hopes for him all the time, and he still has great – I still feel like he has great potential. But it just – this is the player he is, and it's not something the Phillies need. And we just can't – it's not all going to work out. We all wanted it to work out so badly for so long. And we just have to start letting these players go, because the only way the team can get better is by shedding the guys that aren't working.
Well, part of my thinking here is with Rhys Hoskins is selling. If you trade him this offseason, yes, you're trading him at a time where he's not really making anything at all. So he's a cheap guy that to get on your roster, and he's a great clubhouse guy. He's the Phillies' Roberto Clemente Award nominee. So I mean, I love Rhys Hoskins the person, and until the second half this year, I have been very bullish on him as a player because he does have good on base skills. He does seem to have a good eye at the plate, but putting the bat on the baseball with any meaningful force is something that just disappears from him from time to time. And for the whole second half this year, in his second full season in the league, he became an automatic out. I mean, it really was, and they kept hitting him in the middle of the order over and over again, even though he wasn't driving in runs. He wasn't hitting line drives. He was not putting the barrel of the bat on the ball. And yeah, sometimes guys get in funks, but man, we've seen Rhys Hoskins get in these funks and then recover. He never recovered in the second half, and he was incredible. You know, his performance was incredibly damaging. So I'm not even sure what you get for him.
Yeah,
that's why I don't necessarily think he gets traded, because I don't know, like, what team out there is looking at Rhys Hoskins and saying, "Yeah, I'm going to give you your top of the rotation starter for this guy."
Well, and guys like Rhys Hoskins they're everywhere. Like, every team has a first baseman that hits 30 home runs. It's not rare right now. This is a year where home runs were hit often. Like Aaron Judge's, you know, 52 homers rookie record was broken by Pete Alonso this year.
Yeah.
And it was a race up until the end.
Right.
Like Christian Yelich had to get hurt.
Right.
Really. Mm-hmm. And so, like, homers were everywhere. Maybe you could get something for him, but I think the Phillies keep him, not to tout him, but because what else are they going to do? They have to hope he gets better.
Yeah, no, if that's the reason that you want to tout him as an organizational success, you know, I don't think you can really look at his season right now and think, yeah, we know we've got a star player on our hands. I still think there's a really good chance that Hoskins figures it out. And if that's the reason... Like, if you can point to some things and you can say, listen, we know he had a bad second half, but we love how he's been able to make adjustments throughout his career. We think he'll be able to do that again. We think we've identified something that he can fix or he can work on this offseason. We think he was just mentally ground down by the season, and that getting an entire offseason, he's going to come back and be strong next year. And that's probably what the Phillies would say publicly if you asked their thoughts on Rhys Hoskins. This just might have been one of those second halves. It might just been one of those years where things just don't come together for a guy and he comes out strong and becomes the power hitter we were all hoping he would be. But when you're talking about a position like first base, you need offense from that position. You need power. That's one of the few positions on the diamond, especially because Hoskins doesn't offer you much running the bases or doesn't offer you much playing defensively. You need Rhys Hoskins to be a masher in the middle of the lineup. And so he can't be your sixth or seventh best player unless you go out this offseason and you get a bunch more high impact position guys. And, you know, so I question what you could get for Rhys Hoskins. I'm not against trading him either, but I certainly don't think he should be held on to because he's one of the few guys that came up during the Trust the Prospects run to have some success at the major league level. Because right now, Rhys Hoskins is not playing like an all-star. He's not playing like a guy that you should be depending on or at least counting on. I think there are far more questions about Rhys Hoskins going into next year than there are answers.
I would agree. Yeah.
That makes me sad, you know?
Me too. I mean, we just, and it's tough because there's really nothing else to do but wait and see. And just be like, listen, this is going to be his third full season. I mean, and this is when the rubber meets the road with him. He's got to put it together for longer stretches, or the Phillies have to move on and find someone else who can do what they need someone to do at first base, which is hit 30 home runs a year.
Yeah. And that's not Alec Boehm next year, by the way. I know I've seen a lot of people who are ready to trade Rhys Hoskins and give first base to Alec Boehm because they want to also go out and get Anthony Rendon for third base. And listen, I'm fine with getting Rendon for third base if the Phillies are just going to spend crazy money again this offseason, because they got to prioritize a pitcher before they prioritize Anthony Rendon. But that all being said, the answer to trading Rhys Hoskins is, okay, then you just put Alec Boehm at first base. Alec Boehm has played a handful of games at Reading. I think he looks like a really good prospect. Don't get me wrong. I'm very excited about him. I'm bullish on him. But I'm not handing him the first base job next year for a team that has to make the playoffs next season. So, I mean, I think you've got to give Rhys Hoskins another season to see what he can do. If somebody comes along and says, we'll give you our number one starter, a guy who'd be your number two for Rhys Hoskins and a couple lower level prospects, then you really got to make that. You got to make a decision based on whether or not that makes your team better. You can improve the starting pitching that way, because like you said, you can go out and get a decent bat off the free agent market and put them at first base. You could certainly do that. But if a team comes to you with that and it's going to make your team better, you absolutely do that. Whether he came through your system and you've been highly touting him and all that, you know, that's what the Phillies have to do. And I think that was the point of Jack's tweet and for us bringing it up, because any other reason not to trade him is stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't, it can't be about pride or whatever. Like, at this point, John Middleton has to know there are two paths from where they are, with having a farm system that's weak and that has produced very few top line prospects and that have turned into major league players. You can either trade the guys you have in your minor league system for more players, or you can spend as much money as humanly possible. He's got to make a choice, and you could do both, but you can't do neither. You have to do at least one of them, because this team, the way it's constructed, it can't beat the Astros. They can't beat the Dodgers. It's true.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be afraid of them if they actually made it there. Like, there's no harm in playing out, but they can't really beat them, and they have to get to the point where they can.
Right.
You can't hold on to these guys. If the point is to win a World Series, then go and do it. Do it. I'm tired of hearing why you can't. I just want you to go and do it and make a run at it and look like you're trying.
And just to be fair, nobody from the Phillies has put voice to the thoughts that Scott Lauber wrote in his piece, but I don't think Scott would have written that if that wasn't the vibe he was getting from inside the organization. You know what I mean? Like, so that wasn't Lauber's opinion. You know, I think that's generally the vibe he's gotten from inside the organization. And if that's the reason, the Phillies really need to think long and hard about that's just, I'll say this, that's stupid. That's a stupid logic. That's a stupid reason not to trade a guy, is because, well, we haven't had many guys do good. So, you know, we should keep one of the guys that done do good so we can be better and so we can look good. That's just, sorry, I don't know what voice I was going into there, but anyway, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll look at some final stats from the Philly season. We'll tell you who done good, who done not good. I'm going to bring that voice back.
Oh, good.
Pretty much every week. I think I've decided I really enjoy it.
I'm so happy.
Whether the listeners enjoy it or not, I really don't care at this point. I'm going to bring it back, and we're going to do that next right here on Hit the Season. And we're back on Hitting Season. So to wrap things up here, we're going to just go over a couple Philly stats and talk about the playoffs a little bit, as now we have the playoff field set. And what's really great here, Liz, is I had the Philly stats all pulled up in front of me, and then I clicked off the tab. So I'm pulling it back up again now. but in the meantime, I think it's fair to say that based off of what we saw this year, JT Realmuto is the team's MVP this season.
For sure.
I don't think there's any way around that, right?
No, there's no one else. I mean, Harper was great from an emotional standpoint, for sure. But JT Realmuto was the best player on the team by far.
And I will say Bryce Harper's numbers and Real Muto's numbers really picked up in the second half. Both those guys were having disappointing seasons, I thought, offensively.
Agree.
For a better part of the season. And then they were the two guys in this lineup that actually produced in the second half. So looking at Real Muto's line, my man hit .275 this year, .328 on base, .493 slugging. You're getting that from a catcher. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Weighted runs created of .108. Led the team in wins above replacement with 5.6 wins above replacement. That's a damn good season, and that's certainly worth the price that they paid for him this last offseason.
I think we're going to see Philly get a Silver Slugger or a Gold Glove. I think he deserves at least one, if not both.
Yeah. I think he's going to get both. I'm trying to look up all the numbers of catchers in Major League Baseball. I do believe Real Muto led everybody in wins above replacement. He did.
Yeah.
JT Real Muto finished with more wins above replacement than any other catcher in baseball, 5.6. Yasmani Grandal from the Brewers is the only other player close at 5.2. No other catcher had more than 3.9. So those two guys were far and away the best catchers in baseball, and I got to believe Silver Slugger. Well, you know, Grandal might get Silver Slugger. He had a pretty good season,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he might. It's true.
Yeah.
But I think, I want it to be him, if only, because he's ours. And he had such a great season.
You know, what's interesting to think is the Phillies could have signed Yasmani Grandal as a free agent and held on to Sixto Sanchez. But we're all happy to have JT Real Muto. But
why would you say that out loud?
I don't know, because I'm in a place, Liz.
Oh, God.
I know, that was a terrible
thing. That was terrible. Sorry, don't make me, no. I don't want to think about that. We love
JT. I'm sorry, everyone. We love JT. I think he's had a great season. He's a great addition, and they will sign him to an extension this offseason. I have no doubt about it at this point. Let's look at Bryce's numbers, man. Bryce really came through with a great season. I think this is his second-best season ever. .260 batting average. Considering where he was at the start of the season and really through July, he really came on, finished with a .260 average, .372 on base, .510 slugging percentage. Bryce Harper finishing with a slugging percentage over .500 this year. I did not think we would see that. .125 weighted runs created, which led the team among qualified players. 4.6 wins above replacement for him, 35 homers, 114 RBIs. That was a career high in home runs for Bryce Harper. 98 runs scored. He also stole 15 bases this year. I didn't realize Harper had stolen that many bags, but looking at Harper's numbers, his 35 homers were second most in his career. Was only shy of that 2015 MVP season. And according to Fangraphs wins above replacement, the 4.6 was just a little bit less than the 4.8 he had in 2017 when he was going to win the MVP and got hurt in September, only played 111 games that year. But I think you couldn't have asked for anything more from Bryce Harper this season, Liz.
I agree. I mean, I think we all would have liked to see, you know, maybe a little bit more consistency. I feel like that was an issue at times, but he was enjoyable. He fit right in. He obviously loves being here. You know,
Authored all the team's big moments this year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he was like, when you look back at the season, you're only going to really think of the Bryce Harper moments.
Yeah. I mean, I will remember him after that horrible game in Washington where the bitter fans yelled, and like, listen, I don't care if they boo him, but like, don't yell stuff about his newborn kid.
Yeah,
like, that's
on,
just
guys.
Classless. I'm not saying, and I would say the same thing to Phillies fans, like, don't do that. That's horrible. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's
as for
4630 of the podcast.
Sorry.
That's all right. It's fine. No, but you're right. That's the appropriate word to use there because that's absolutely nonsense.
But he said, you know, he's like, I can't wait to get home to our fans. Like, and I'm just like, yes, I love that. Like, we are yours. We are your fans. We would fight other fans for you.
Yes.
That's what happens when you're part of this weird family.
I'd even go a step further. Philly fans are eager to fight other fans.
Oh, God, yes.
For you. Yeah. Not that just that we would do it. It's like, oh, please, can we do it?
Give you us, know, we just need next year. We just need more of a reason. We just need the team to be competitive.
Exactly.
In a different way than this year.
And I really liked what he said. I really think he loves being in Philadelphia and being a part of the fan base. And you know, hopefully he's able to, you know, help the team out a little bit more from the beginning of the season. Because you're right, it was a slow burn for him from the beginning of the season. He had a rough first half, but really came on as the season went along. All right, so who do you think finished third on the team in wins above replacement, Liz?
That's a good question. I'm looking at a roster list. No.
Okay.
No wins above replacement.
All right.
Is it Gene Segura?
It's not. Gene Segura finished fourth, very close, 2.4 wins above replacement. He's one of the guys I thought had a disappointing year for the Phillies.
Yeah.
Three straight years over 300 batting average and only hit with a weighted runs created of like 112 each of the last 3 years. This year only 280 with a 323 on base, 420 slugging. Didn't get enough from Gene Segura this year.
Yeah, I would agree. So do I guess again? Is that what the,
yes,
guess
yeah, give me one more guess.
Scott Kingery?
It is.
Oh!
Young Scotty. In only 126 games, so he probably was on a 3.5 win pace if he plays the normal number of games. 258 average, 315 on base, 474 slugging, 101 weighted runs. I can't get that out today. WRC plus, weighted runs created. 2.7 wins above replacement for him this year. A very nice bounce back season for Kingery, but of course he also had his struggles in the second half of the season. To me, he seems like a guy who just wears down at the end of the year. That's what I think happened with Kingery this year. He kind of got back into some old habits, a lot more chasing out of the strike zone. And I think he just kind of got a little bit physically worn down this year. I still am pretty high on him, but, you know, do you think he's the everyday second baseman next year? Or do you think they bring back Cesar Hernandez, who hit 279 with a 333 on base, 408 slugging, 92 weighted wins, weighted runs created, and he had a 1.7 wins above replacement.
I think he's going to be too expensive compared to what they can get out of just Scott Kingery. I think it's time to fish or cut bait. He's just, I don't know. He's just sort of, it just feels like all of those numbers are fine. They're great, but they also feel kind of empty.
Yeah, they do. They do. A lot of the numbers feel, because he goes into long stretches where he's not doing anything.
Like I've watched the Phillies. I was surprised that he was doing so well when I checked his stats, you know, when I wasn't just like listening to the game absently.
Right.
You know, right. I'm just like, wow, he really brought it up after, you know, he had a rough start. But I'm just like, it never seems like he's doing anything.
It's because he gets hot when people aren't paying attention. Like when the team is kind of struggling, he tends to, well, that's not true. Like, I mean, when the team is struggling, he is generally struggling. But he'll go on these really hot streaks where he piles up a lot of hits. But because he's never a major cog, you don't really see it all that often. But, you know, even with those numbers and some of those hot streaks, he was still a below league average offensive player for a second baseman. And Kingery's a far better defender and far better base runner, and he's going to cost a whole lot less. I know the Phillies, I'm just worried that the Phillies, not worried, because I think Kingery has done a really good job as a jack of all trades at different positions this year. I think the Phillies really value that. And I don't know that they're going to give him second base. I agree with you, though. I don't think they're going to keep Cesar Hernandez. I just don't know what they do at second base if they want to make Kingery their Swiss Army knife, which I think they really like him in that spot.
And then what else are they doing? I mean, I guess this is, you know, we're talking about that now, and it's tough too. But, you know, it's I guess you're right. I mean, in essence, if they want to keep him as their Swiss Army knife, they would have to sign someone else anyway.
And I was looking at second baseman. It's not a great list.
God, maybe,
you know,
they
Jonathan
just keep
Scope,
him.
Maybe. I mean, maybe they keep him. Maybe
I don't
they
know.
Keep him.
I mean, it just it. Who is he? He is an enigma.
Yeah.
He. Well, I mean,
he's
just
he's an imperfect player. You know.
It's not even he's very businesslike. He knows about it. He doesn't. There's no, you know, there's no flashiness. It's just he lays down a good at bat and goes about his business. Like, does he have a wife? Does he have children? Does he have parents? Like, is he from a land far, far away? Like, we know where it's from, but it's just like, it feels like he's a complete non-entity on this team, which if that's how he wants it to be, then that's fine. But,
you know, maybe this is unfair and a little bit harsh, but he seems to me to be a guy from an era of this team where losing was kind of accepted. And I just get the sense from him sometimes with some of the, he continues to kind of make some blunders out in the field and on the base paths at times. Like, I just don't know that Hernandez, I don't want to say he's not a winning player or anything like that, but I wonder if they, you know, there needs to be a little bit of, you know, even more of a culture change with some of the players that we're talking about here, guys who, when they would make mistakes, when you're rebuilding, it's not a big deal, you know? And Hernandez just at times, he's a very frustrating player to watch, but when he is hot, man, he can really help. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing about Cesar Hernandez at this point, because he's got a lot of positives. He does a lot of good things, but he's also going to be very expensive for kind of an average to below average offensive second baseman in the league who does not play above average defense. So we can tackle him a little bit more in depth. I wanted to ask you one other question here. So Bryce Harper led the team in homers with 35, okay? Hoskins had 29, Real Muto had 25, and Kingery had 19. Who was in fifth in home runs? After Harper, Hoskins, Real Muto, Kingery, who had the most home runs after those guys?
Who's left? it's not Hazley. How many? I know Jay Bruce hit 12.
Yep, Jay Bruce hit 12. This guy had more.
Did anybody hit?
He hit five more than 12.
Oh, is it Michael Franco?
It is Michael Franco. Mikey. 17 homers. And what was probably, you mentioned him at the beginning, probably his last game as a Philly. Michael Franco finishes the season with 17 home runs, fifth most on the team. When you consider how much time he spent in AAA and only got 428 plate appearances, this kind of tells the story of the Philly season, how they had some trouble hitting the long ball. Although they set a club record for home runs in September, that was the very definition of a day late and a dollar short, unfortunately. But certainly some interesting seasons here. We'll see what the Phillies do with Corey Dickerson. I think maybe the decision on Dickerson was made a little easier with him missing the last few weeks of the season. But hopefully the Phillies will get a healthy Andrew McCutchen back next year. Gene Segura will be back. You hope that some of these guys who had down seasons like Segura, like Hoskins, maybe Kingery is able to sustain his success for more than he did this year. Mm-hmm. There's some hope that the offense can bounce back a little bit. But we'll get into some pitching stats maybe next time around. But before we wrap up, let's talk about the postseason bracket. So the Phillies are obviously not participating, but some other teams, they're going to have a playoffs anyway. So let's talk about it. We know the two wild card teams in the National League, the Nationals are going to host the Milwaukee Brewers in the one wild card game. Max Scherzer is going to start for the Nationals. I don't know who the Brewers are going to start in that game. I don't even know if that's been decided as of yet. It's going to be... Oh, no, they don't have it listed yet. That's the announcers. The Brewers is TBA, so we don't know who the Brewers are going to face yet, and they're going to go up against Max Scherzer. You like the Nationals in that one?
Probably, yeah. I mean, I wish it could be the Brewers. They had such a great... I mean, I'd written them off at one point. I think a lot of people did. And it just... Sure. That NL Central is a lot of fun because it's just those three teams really fighting it out. It would have been fun if the NL East could have been that way this year, too. I feel like I mean, the Brewers could hit the Nationals into oblivion. Maybe Baxter Scherzer has an off night. It's one-game playoff. Anything could happen.
No doubt. Absolutely. And we've seen Scherzer not be quite as sharp here in the second half as he came back from the back injury. So, and we all know DC's luck in the playoffs. So anything could happen. Yeah, unfortunately, that would kill my son, by the way.
I'm so sorry. I wish I could care.
That's okay. I know. I don't blame you. In the other wild card game, you got the Rays at the A's. Charlie Morton's going to go for the Rays. This is on Wednesday. The National League wild card game will be on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock on TBS. The AL wild card game will be on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Charlie Morton against TBA for the A's. I know these are two teams that don't spend any money. These are the Moneyball darlings, the guys who have low payrolls. They figure out different ways to construct their rosters, and man, they win 90 games every doggone year. It's unbelievable. And these two teams are going to fight for a chance to go play the Astros in the division series.
I have to root for the Athletics because I can't stand the Rays. They are actively detrimental to my enjoyment of baseball, and they're also completely useless.
Yeah.
Sorry, no, it's A's all day.
I love the A's anyway. I mean, it's just
they used
I don't
to be a Philadelphia team. We're bound to it's we have to, right? Isn't that how it goes?
Yeah, there's a little there's a sentimental link as far as I'm concerned for sure. All right, so let's say the Nationals beat the Brewers in the wild card game. If it's Dodgers versus Nationals, I think the obvious answer is the Dodgers winning that series,
100%.
Right? Yeah, okay. Braves and Cardinals in the other series. That gets underway in Atlanta on Thursday. This could be a very good series. The Cardinals have caught fire, mm-hmm. but the Braves have been good all dadgum season long. I like the Braves.
I was just going to say, I would love to not pick the Braves, but I'm going to have to pick the Braves.
Yeah,
I hate it I have no ill will towards these Cardinals. Like, the Cardinals in general, I don't like as a team because they're very weird and hyper-religious. But I haven't, like, my anger at them for 2011 has faded somewhat. But even then, I can't. The Braves are just going to be unstoppable, and they're going to make us hate them. The only hope that we have is that it turns into the mid-90s again.
There's nothing worse than the tomahawk chop in the playoffs.
Oh, God.
Nothing worse than the tomahawk.
I am
the
not
worst
swearing.
Thing in the
Look
world.
At me not swear.
I love how you reeled that in, Liz. Good for you. Mm-hmm. Saved me some editing after the show. I appreciate that. So let's do the Astros versus the American League wildcard winner. Do we both agree that the Astros are going to smoke whoever comes out of that wildcard game?
Probably.
Yeah.
God, probably. I hate the Astros.
I know. Yankees versus Twins. It just seems like every time the Twins get in the doggone playoff, they play the Yankees in the first round, and they can never make it work.
No, the Twins don't have a prayer.
No.
They don't have a prayer at all. Sorry.
Yep. This could be another sweep. It'll be just poor Twins. All right. So we like, at this point, we like Houston, and we like the Yankees in the ALCS, and we like the Braves and the Dodgers in the NLCS. If those two teams get that far, Braves versus Dodgers in the National League Championship Series, who you got in the World Series from the National League?
I'm going to say Dodgers. I hope it's Dodgers. I'm kind of pulling, I know a lot of Dodgers fans. I don't hate them. I think they're fine. I like them a lot. I had several of them in my recent wedding. So, I kind of want them to be happy.
All right. And I won't allow myself to pick the Braves, even if I think they have a good chance. So I'm going to pick LA as well. And then Yankees versus Astros, Liz. I guess you're going to take the Yankees
there? I will take
the
Yankees.
I'll take the Astros just to be on the other side of the fence. I do think the Astros just have a far better team. So you have you'll have the Yankees against the Dodgers in the World Series. Tell me baseball doesn't want that matchup.
I'm with it. I'd love it.
Every game would just be
a who's who of awesomeness like that.
Yeah,
that's the dream. I like that. I want it. That's the future I want.
So Yankees, Dodgers, who you got? Do the Dodgers fall short for a fourth straight year?
I can't. That would be terrible for them, and I don't want that to happen. I want it to be the Dodgers. But honestly, I would be angry at it being the Yankees just sort of cosmically, like from a big picture standpoint, but they're a good, fun team that dealt with injuries the way the Phillies should have by getting better somehow.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really is. So you're gonna take the Dodgers?
I'll take the Dodgers.
All right, and I've got Houston going up against the Dodgers in a rematch of the World Series from a couple years ago. I think the Dodgers will get their revenge this time around.
God, I hope so. Please.
This has felt like the Dodgers' year the whole way. So I'm going to take the Dodgers over the Astros to win the World Series, and finally we can be done of people complaining about the Dodgers.
Yeah.
So
end all right, every curse and every drought, so no one has anything to complain about ever again.
Exactly. All right, Liz, any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
I'm glad we made it to the end of the baseball season. It was not easy for anybody. I thank you all for listening and continuing to listen. I regret to inform you that unfortunately we won't be able to sign Bryce Harper again. So
maybe Garrett Cole though. Maybe Garrett Cole, maybe some of those.
The Bryce Harper stuff fueled a lot of podcasts last year to the point where we wanted to all end our own lives. But I hope you will all continue to tune in as we boldly and blindly stumble into the Phillies' future together.
Absolutely. And yeah, I echo what Liz had to say. We thank you for being with us for this entire 2019 season, from the beginning when we got Bryce Harper to the end when we finished with a 81-81 record. Clearly not the season we wanted, but we thank you guys for sticking with us, and make sure to stay with us throughout the offseason, because there is no Bryce Harper or Manny Machado going around this time, but it will be a fascinating offseason, and we'll have everything for you right here on Hittin' Season, on Continued Success, and of course, don't forget to check out The Dirty Inning, which also talks about the current Phillies a little bit, but mostly is a fun history lesson for you. And make sure you're subscribing to the Good Fight podcast feed to get all that good stuff. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.